sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. We have Phil standing by. We'll get to his call in just a second. The top of the hour feature, though, that we wanted to talk about, last week, Ton, we started talking about, you know, people are excited about planting, so they're starting to plan and they're starting to buy seeds from seed catalogs. And if you didn't hear our discussion last week on seed catalogs, you can find that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page or go to the podcast and you can learn more about Ton's favorite seed catalogs. But anyway, this morning you want to talk about people oftentimes they buy these seeds and then they plant way too many seeds. So what is too many? How should we be thinking when we're actually starting to plan our gardens?
Well, there's a few different things that you take home messages or takeaways from knowing how much to plant. So during World War I, the government actually got heavily involved during World War II in encouraging the run-of-the-mill citizens to grow gardens because a lot of the produce from farms was being used to support the war effort, being shipped overseas to our soldiers and allies in both wars. And especially during both wars, we didn't have the infrastructure as far as especially freeways to readily move food more than just maybe on a regional basis. And so the government, because resources were so precious and at a premium, wrote gardening guides to help the citizens know how much to plant within just a few percentage points of, you know, what you would use. And they would have yields of the vegetables and they would have a journal that you could keep your own ledgers on what you planted, and you were supposed to weigh what you harvested and then weigh and record how much you preserved and how much went to waste. And use these figures to know to a finite point what you needed to plant the next year. Now, fortunately, we're not in this situation. But people that are serious gardeners oftentimes keep these kinds of records so that they know. And even amongst like tomatoes, yield can vary greatly from variety to variety and year to year. And so it's valuable to keep these records long term. Now, this is very important for, say, market growers. You know, we had Kent Pine on a few weeks ago, and he absolutely knows how many trees he's putting in the ground and kind of knows what the yields will be so that he doesn't over or under plant. And you know, we've had Sheridan Hansen on in the past, and she used to be a market grower, and she kept thorough records of everything she planted to know what to do in the future. And if you are someone interested in homesteading or growing a larger garden to support yourselves, these sorts of things become very important.
Right. And if you're one of those people who is thinking, hey, I want to grow my own food, this is where you'd start.
It is. And so we've got a fact sheet here that will give you approximate yields per plant or per row foot. And it will help you know how much to plant if you are interested in being more than just the casual gardener with a couple of tomato plants for some salads and salsa and things. And it's very difficult to know, okay, I've got four kids, two adults in my home. How much corn would I need to grow for fresh use and for preservation? And they have a quantity listed saying you'll probably need this much for fresh use and this much per person to preserve if you're going to use this to support yourself or do it greatly. And from these figures, you can adjust up or down according to what you use, because, you know, some families may love sweet corn and so you would grow more of it, but others may love green beans and so you would grow more or less of them. And so you can use this chart as a starting point to know how much to grow.
Right. This conversation becomes incredibly important when you're talking about, I know right now very popular documentary out there is You Are What You Eat, and it really focuses on vegetables. And if you want to have a garden that can provide you with enough vegetables to feed your family, a list like this, a chart like this that kind of shows you what you need to plant, how much of it you need to plant for your family can be crucial.
It is very crucial. And especially, you know, we keep talking about casual gardeners as compared to those who are wanting to start a business. And that is becoming a lot more common with millennials and Gen Z. They want
We're
to
worried
know.
About our
yes,
food.
Yes, we
though.
Are.
We all are, right? And you so know, the more that we can grow, problem is our growing season's not really long.
It's not like we would get in California or Florida. And so our food production potential is lower than those areas, but it's long enough to grow quite a bit of produce. And so I have an old copy of a World War I vegetable gardening guide that I don't really post copies of because it has a canning guide from 1915.
And which could be scary.
If you want to give a food safety scientist heart attack, follow that gardening
right.
guide. But it talks, and it's written for warmer climates, but it actually goes in on how to succession plant. And you would start with your radishes and lettuce very first, you know, as soon as you can get out there, and then, you know, maybe even field peas, all the cool season crops, but it gives you a guide. And in these areas, you might, in that same row of plants, be able to do two or three crops with the same square footage that you normally would just grow one. And so it, you can produce a lot of food on a little bit of land if you keep records and practice transitional planting.
All right. And you can find this chart on the Facebook page. I'd also like to mention, Ton, that for those people who really want to extend their gardening season, we did a video a couple of seasons ago that talks about how you can do that with in a number of different ways. And you can find that video on the KSL Greenhouse YouTube channel. It's a great video for how to extend your gardening season.
It is, and it has anything from very easy to very serious. If you want the big cold frames and things, it's a great video.
So check that out as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Phil, you are up next. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. And you can text us your questions at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Phil has been very patient. He's in Lehigh. Phil, good morning. What was your question?
Put blue spruce that a truck went out of control, slid across the snow and ice and into my planter bed and knocked it over, and I have about 70% of the roots still on it, and I'm just wondering what to do about it. You know, do I try to transplant it now or hold it over till the fall, till the spring, or what should I do?
So how big is the tree?
It's 5 feet tall.
Okay, so you can move it. How long has it been in the ground?
It's been in the ground for probably about 15 years.
Ouch, okay. And how frozen is your soil?
It's not too frozen. I'm just also concerned about all the ice melt that, you know, between me and the city has put down on the street and on the sidewalk. If I try to transplant plant it, you know, maybe getting some of the ice melt mixed in with the soil.
You know, I think that if you were able to rake off the top inch or so of soil before you started digging, that would eliminate or reduce that problem. And you could dig that spruce now and just move it because it is dormant. And if your ground's not too frozen, especially if you had access to a mini excavator that you could trench around it, you could move that tree right now, and it'd actually be a great time to do it.
Now, the damage to the branches, I mean, conifers are not known for dormant buds, so any damage to the branches are probably not going to come back. Is that correct?
They might. If they're not, if it's into areas where there is no needle growth, those will not come back. But if you still have needles, even though the branch was broken, those needles will shoot side growth that will eventually become not a leader, but it will start to grow out because there aren't other branches competing with it. And over time, it'll self-repair those areas.
Okay. Now, on the root, on the roots, I have about 70% of the roots. There's more roots on one side than the other. And I guess it'll just be take time. If there's a good chance that maybe one side of the tree will be more healthy than the other?
No, because it can translocate water throughout the conductive tissue. And so it would be, let's say you go in there and you dig a root ball two and a half feet wide and about 2 feet deep. That's about the size of ball you would need. And you'd use a pair of sharp loppers to cut the root so you have a sharp, flat cut so you don't have just debris everywhere. And you would dig a hole of the same size and put it in the new hole. And in essence, you've just what's used a bald and burlap tree. You know, you've got that root ball. And so per inch of trunk width, you have a year of recovery. But the tree wouldn't necessarily die, but it might only shoot a couple of inches of growth for 4 or 5 years after you move it. And so that's done all the time in the nursery industry, but they're trained. Those trees are trained to keep the roots closer to the trunk, but I think it would survive only being 5 feet tall.
And after I do it, do I want to water it or do anything or just bury it?
Make
now?
Sure that the soil's moist. If you can't do it immediately, cover the roots in soil or potting soil so that they stay moist and they don't desiccate, and just move it as soon as you can.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your call this morning, Phil. Thanks for listening. Next listener, Tom, this is a text question. They have an infestation of tiny, tiny flies like fruit flies. Must be coming from a plant, but they can't ID the fly. How do we get rid of them?
It's most likely fungus gnat, which is an indication that the plant is being overwatered and that there's probably a lack of drainage. It may be sitting in a container to hold the water from flooding the floor. And so they need to get the pot elevated above the container that it's in, or if the pot doesn't have drainage holes, drill some holes in the bottom of the pot with several holes with like a quarter to a third inch wide bit and create the drainage and water it every 7 to 10 days. But if they dry it out, they don't want to wilt the plant down, but if they get that soil dry and then only rewater it, over a period of a month or two, those fungus gnats will start to disappear.
It sounds like they aren't even sure which plant it is. So the first thing is going to be to identify which plant is causing the problem.
Yes, and it may be all of them. All of them could be overwatered, and all of them could be sitting in the trays. And so they can put gravel in the trays and set the pots on top of the gravel. They can put blocks of wood. Or if the pots don't have drainage holes, they will need to drill into the pots and then get some trays from a garden center and just put some blocks of wood or gravel in the tray and set the plant on top so that they're not continuously in standing water.
Right. You always say get to the root of the problem, especially in this particular case, because those flies are almost impossible to get rid of without getting rid of the source of the
problem. They are. And I've seen people take a third of an inch of sand and put it on top of the potting soil. And it dries out bone dry, and it's really hard for the fungus gnats to penetrate through to lay more eggs. That's another kind of pesticide thing they could try.
Right. And there are things that kind of attract them that are just, they kind of sort of work, but they don't really,
not really
solve the problem.
If you want to gross yourself out, cut a potato up into a wedge about 1 inch wide and 2 or 3 inches long and bury it halfway into the soil and leave it for a day. If you have a lot of fungus gnats, it's the larvae that are doing the damage to the plant. It's not the flies, even though they're a nuisance, but you'll pull the potato out and it'll be full of the fungus gnat larvae. It looks like little fruit worms.
So is that a partial solution?
No, it's just a good way to gross yourself out.
Oh, wow. Ugh.
Okay. It's a way to monitor to see the number of worms in the soil, but it doesn't
like
control
sticky
them.
Tape. And I know I've seen some companies that sell these little apple-like looking things.
Yeah, and they just reduce the numbers of flies a bit, but not to a point that it's actually going to get rid of the problem.
Yeah, I think this time of year we are watering just like we did our house plants, just like we did in the summer, and we just don't need to water that much.
We don't. Every 7 to 10 days on average is all they need.
Right. And if you wanted to be technical about it, how would you check the soil?
Stick your finger in the soil a couple inches deep. If the soil is on the drier side, water them.
And for folks who do have this problem, though, how wet is that? So, I mean, how would they know if they've... Which
you can feel a little bit of moisture in the soil, but you'll see the soil changes color from a dark gray or black to a lighter gray or light brown, and the soil will contract away from the edges of the pot as it dries out. And so when you see it turn a lighter color and it starts to contract away from the edges of the pot, stick your finger in an inch or two deep, and if the soil is on the drier side but not bone dry, it's ready for an irrigation.
Yeah, you also need to kind of watch those bigger pots that are sitting inside pots, because you can have standing water inside your house, realize it, right? Right, so watch those big plants as well. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaos, Ton Bettis with you. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255, and the phone lines are open, so you can call us now. You can also text us your questions at 57500. A couple of comments from our listeners over a couple of the topics we've talked about this morning. One of those, the weed torch, and this person reminding us, Ton, that if we're going to use a weed torch, we need to make sure there's no red flag warning, fire restrictions, and you also need to make sure that you check local ordinances.
I would consider calling the fire marshal, fire department, to see, because a lot of times if you are going to be burning, even with a weed torch, you do need permission, and the fire department needs to be aware in case someone calls saying there's smoke or... You know, just give them a heads up. But I know that Santa Quinn City and Southern Utah County, the fire department or the fire county and the city fire marshals will set aside a block of 2 or 3 weeks in early spring that you can burn.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe again in the fall. And so the farmers can burn their ditches. The orchards will sometimes burn their limbs so that you can do it. But otherwise, you do have to get permission from the fire marshal, and a lot of times there's a restriction that you have to own more than a half an acre or an acre before you're allowed to burn. Now, if you have a gravel drive where your RV sits and it's mostly weed free, and it's, you know, you take your weed torch out and fry the 3-inch weeds, I don't know that anybody's going to call the police on you. You have to use your head. And so that's why people, I think, get so much angst with these weed torches, because it's just easy to mess up. But there are regulations and ordinances that you do need permission from the fire marshal before you technically burn.
Yeah, and thanks for chiming in. We always appreciate your comments. Another person says, in addition to your recommendations for fungus gnats, Bonide is an excellent product, systemic houseplant insect control that you place on top of the soil. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it works. There's some things to consider. A lot of people don't want to use systemics. You know, in your houseplants, I'm not as concerned because you're not eating them. But if you've got pets or small kids that play in the soil, that is a consideration. And sometimes a new houseplant is cheaper than a package of pesticide. You know, you're paying $15 or $20. You can get a heck of a plant, house plant, for that same price.
Right. Okay. Next listener wants to know, can they replant their paper white narcissus?
If they've already bloomed, they can hold them until they go dormant, mm-hmm. and then just keep the bulbs dormant. You would keep them dry, and then the next fall or next winter, replant them.
Just in a cool place?
Yeah, keep them at 55 degrees or so and relatively dry. They will try to resprout at some point, but you would replant them. I've heard of a few people doing it, but it's one of those things that becomes a hobby.
Next listener brings up just a great topic, because I've had a lot of questions about cucumbers in the past and which ones to plant. And they're asking what varieties of cucumbers are less bitter.
It's going to depend on irrigation. If the cucumbers are bitter.
So you're saying it's not the variety, it's the water.
Yeah, there are some that are supposed to be what you call burpless that resist getting bitter, but they will. And it's when they are drought stressed, they maybe not visibly, but the soil's dry and then you irrigate them heavily. The soil dries out. Heat has a little bit to do with it too. And so you want the cucumbers that say burpless, but they can still get bitter, but it's usually sporadic irrigation going from really dry to really wet to really dry that causes it.
Mm-hmm. So I've had hit and miss success with cucumbers, and I wish I had done a better job of tracking which varieties I planted because it really makes a difference. But what's your favorite variety of cucumber to plant?
You know, for production, just for the sheer numbers you get, Armenian cucumbers, which aren't actually even a true cucumber. They're actually related, more closely related to cantaloupe, but they look and act like a cucumber.
Those, but they're a little bit longer.
They're longer. Mm-hmm. And the Armenian cucumbers are just really productive, and they seem to be a little bit more heat tolerant. Ah. And so when you're not getting fruit production because of 100-plus degree weather, the Armenian cukes seem to be a little more adapted to that. And so you can pickle them. People sometimes, they taste a little different than traditional cucumbers, and so they're a little afraid of them. But Market Moor is an old variety. It's an heirloom that has been really good for me. There's some pickling cukes out there. I'm trying to remember.
Market Moor?
I think Market Moor 76.
Okay. I make lists like this every week of things I want to plant.
Yeah, I've grown that one in the past, but there are many of them out there. But if you've had problems, find ones that say burpless in the name or burpless in the description.
Okay. Okay. And it does depend on what you want to do with them. Because if you want smaller pickles, you're probably not going to want to grow the Armenian cucumbers.
No, because Armenians can get 18 inches long, but they're still usable. They don't get really hard seeds at that point.
But you're not going to win a contest at the fair.
No, you're not.
Just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I love to take cucumbers and put them in a brine with vinegar and some other seasonings.
Oh, me too.
One of my favorite things, but you can do that with Armenians. You can pickle Armenian cucumbers. So some other ones that I have liked to play with a little bit are the lemon cukes. There's the English cucumbers that you find in the plastic wrap in the stores.
I love the English cucumbers.
They have a real mild flavor.
They don't have so many seeds, so they're really good for, you know, like pasta dishes where you don't want a lot of liquid in there.
Correct. And so there are those, and then
those grow pretty well here?
They do. Okay. You can. They like the cooler weather, and so they may struggle a little bit, but you can grow them. There's also a lot of Japanese cucumbers that have yellow skin and different things that are also fun to play with.
Well, and add variety to your salads, for sure.
Yes.
Okay, so best pickling cucumber, though, if you want just a smaller cucumber?
I would need to defer to some of our home economists. And this is just me, I look at the practicality. Pickles are so cheap that I don't like pickling cucumbers. My mom always used to, and I think they did grow Market Moor and some of the other pickling cucumbers. But for me personally, besides the fresh pickles that you can do where you just put them in the brine, that is something I have not experimented with.
Okay, so 1 year, way back before children, so it's been a long time since I've done this, I did actually pickle cucumbers. I had just a great number of them, thought I'd give it a shot. And the thing is, Ton, they taste so different and so much better than what you buy in the store. It's like buying a tomato in the store or growing it in your yard. There is a distinct difference. And if you're spoiled and you start tasting the ones that have been home canned, you're not going to go back.
Yes, there are. And if you can the wrong cucumber, they will turn mushy because you have to boil them. And so you need to be careful and make sure you're using a firm pickling variety.
Okay, so you need to do a little bit of research. If you plan to pickle the cucumbers, you need to do some research on that.
You do. And there's some people that will put the grape leaf in with the pickle to add some flavor, but you don't want to use the grapes that grow here because they're usually hybrid American varieties and the leaves have a little bit of a bitter flavor.
Oh.
If we lived in a warmer climate where we grew European grapes, it's a thing to put a grape leaf in with a pickle to get some extra flavor from them because the European grape leaves have a milder flavor to them.
I must have European grapes then.
You may. Or at least you're, well, there's a lot of them that are hybrid.
One of my grandmother's to start from my grandmother, so maybe that's the case.
There's some American grapes that have a really strong flavor that if you do too much, it can actually give you an off flavor to the pickles. But my mom used to do it with her Concords, and I could not. They tasted fine.
Okay. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can also text us your questions, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday with the KSL Greenhouse. The sun is finally coming out in downtown Salt Lake City. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. I love some of our comments and questions this morning. This one, Ton, do you know why they are called burpless cucumbers?
I honestly have never researched it, and I imagine that they don't give you heartburn if you eat them, but that's about the only thing I can come up with.
But cucumbers don't ever give you heartburn, do they?
Maybe,
well,
if they're
vinegar,
bitter. Yeah.
Well, if they're bitter, right? That could do it, I guess. Next listener says, what edible greens can you grow indoors?
Most of them. And you just need some grow lights or some fluorescent bulbs over the top of them.
Hydroponics are pretty good.
Yeah, we're going to be talking lettuce next hour a little bit. Not so much indoors, but any green can be grown inside.
Okay, but you just have to have the lights.
You do. Have them in a window plus the lights would be the best situation.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a couple of harvests out of lettuce, but you want to be reseeding them every 3 or 4 weeks so that you have a steady supply. And some people will just harvest once and then dump the plants and recycle the soil and things at green waste and then replant in new soil.
The first year I planted lettuce, I thought that the plant, I could just trim it off and it would regrow more lettuce.
They do sort of.
They don't. When you say sort of, that's just a great way to fail for sure. All those things that you do when you're inexperienced, right? Yeah, you have to reseed.
Okay, here's some cucumber recommendations from USU.
Okay.
Market Moore is one I've grown. Mm-hmm. Space Master for small spaces. Sweet Success. That would indicate maybe something that's burpless. SMR58, Armenian, and Boston Pickling are some they recommend.
Boston Pickling, okay.
Yes.
It's one that you should try. Next listener says they really love the red grapes that you buy in the store. Can you grow them in Utah? Seems like they come from elsewhere.
If you are in the St. George or Moab areas, yes, but otherwise not really. It's Red Flame is the variety, and on the bench areas, there are years that you would get some fruit, but it'd be one out of every 3 or 4 years because they're hardy down to about 10 degrees, maybe 15. And so if you get below those temperatures, then the wood is damaged and it regrows from dormant buds, and it takes those dormant buds 2 to 3 years to come into fruit production. And so there's always that risk. If they want a very similar replacement, Canadas, not Candace, but Canada, C-A-N-A-D-A-C-E, tastes very similar. They're a little smaller, but they have that same just really sweet, mild flavor. And so that's the one I recommend locally for a red seedless.
Okay. We have found in this past year so many delicious grapes in the grocery store that you can't grow. I'm trying to think of some of the varieties.
There's the cotton candy.
Cotton candy are so good. We can't grow them here.
We can't. One, they're under patent for another 13, 14 years.
Rude.
And they're a European variety that just isn't cold hardy. So eventually you could grow them in St. George and Washington County. But I will say that there are numerous hardy table grapes, seedless table grapes, that just taste so good. Anything from mild to, when I say strongly flavored, they're just more flavorful.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if we could time it this next year, Mike Karen, who's our grape specialist, will harvest 13 or 14 varieties at once, and we could bring some in and do some taste testing. You know, his favorite is one called Jupiter, which is seedless, but it has not really a musky flavor, but it's more strongly flavored and it makes a good juice. But there are many other ones out there, depending on your taste, that you can actually grow fresh that will taste as good or better than what you can get in the store.
Okay, I want you to ask him about one that would be similar to the ones...
To cotton candy?
To cotton candy. Why can't I remember that? It's just not a name I associate with a grape, but they're delicious.
They are very delicious.
Okay, so I want you to ask him, okay. And next week we'll tell folks what he says about that.
Yeah, as soon as his schedule relaxes a little bit, we need to get him in to talk about a number of things, but Mike does all that, and he can tell us all about good grape varieties.
Okay. I have a listener who just texted Vegetable Garden, and I don't know what to say about that. They want us to talk about vegetable gardens, and...
They're good.
Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, and our phone lines are open. We've been answering a bunch of questions off the Facebook page as well today. People send us questions. One thing about the Facebook page, if you want to send us a message over Messenger, that's awesome, but sometimes we don't see it until the next week. So you don't get as rapid a reply as if you text us your questions.
It's a good way to contact us. Michelle, our producer, checks it at least weekly. And so it is one way to get a hold of us when we're not on the air.
Right, because this isn't what we do full time.
It's not. But if you have an in-depth question, you know, that's beyond just a simple couple-line answer, don't. Call in, because I can't answer in-depth questions on Facebook, because one, it takes a half hour to 45 minutes to formulate a response. And oftentimes I need to ask follow-up questions to give an answer. And so if there's something complicated, Facebook is not the place for it.
One good thing about Messenger, though, is you can send us pictures where you can't send us pictures on the text line. So if you have a problem that requires a picture, make sure you send that to us on the Messenger. Okay, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, we're going to talk about practical vegetable gardening. So whatever that person wanted to ask, hopefully we'll answer their questions when we come back. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us 57500.